Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 4, Ambarish Maharaj, offended by Durvasa Muni, text number 71. Brahmam stad gacha badram te. Nabhaga tanayam nripam. Shama paya mahabhagam. Tatak shantir bhavishyati. Brahman. O Brahmana. Tat. Therefore. Gacha. You go. Bhadram. All auspiciousness. Te. Unto you. Nabhaga tanayam. To the son of Maharaj Nabha. Nripam, the king Ambarisha. Shamapaya. Just try to pacify him. Mahabhagam. A great personality. A pure devotee. Tata, thereafter, shanti, peace, avishati, there will be. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O best of the Brahmanas, you should therefore go immediately to King Ambarisha, the son of Maharaj Nabhaga. I wish you all good fortune. If you can satisfy Maharaj Ambarisha, then there will be peace for you. Purport. In this regard, Madhva Muni quotes from the Garuda Purana. The lesson be derived from this narration concerning Maharaj Ambarisha and Durvasa Muni is that all the demigods, including Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, are under the control of Lord Vishnu. Therefore, when a Vaishnava is offended, the offender is punished by Vishnu, the Supreme Lord. No one could protect such a devotee, even Brahma or Lord Shiva. Next is the Durvasa Muni, chapter 5, Durvasa Muni's life spared. Shukadeva Goswami said, when thus advised by Lord Vishnu, Durvasa Muni, who was very much harassed by the suitor's son Chakra, immediately approached Maharaj Ambarisha. Being very much aggrieved, the Muni fell down and clasped the king's lotus feet. When Durvasa Muni touched his lotus feet, Maharaj Ambarisha was very much ashamed, and when he saw Durvasa Muni attempting to offer prayers because of mercy, he was aggrieved even more. Thus he immediately began offering prayers to the great weapon of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Maharaj Ambarisha said, O Sudarsan Chakra, you are fire, you are the most powerful sun, you are the moon, you are the master of all luminaries, you are the water, earth and sky, you are the air, you are the five sense objects, sound, touch, form, taste and smell, and you are the senses also. O most favored of Achyuta, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you have thousands of spokes. O master of the material world, destroyer of all weapons, original vision of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Kindly give shelter and auspiciousness to this Brahmana. O Sudarsan Wheel, you are religion, you are truth, you are encouraging statements, you are sacrifice, and you are the enjoyer of the fruits of sacrifice. You are the maintainer of the entire universe. And you are the supreme transcendental prowess in the hands of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are the original version of the Lord, and therefore you are known as Sudarsan, Sudarshana. Everything has been created by your activities, and therefore you are all-pervading. Report. The Sudarshana means auspicious vision. From Vedic instructions we understand that this material world is created by the glance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sa Aikshata Sa Ashrijata. Supreme Personality of Godhead glanced over the Mahatattva, or the total material energy, and when it was agitated, everything came into existence. Western philosophers sometimes think that the original cause of creation was a chunk that exploded. If one thinks of this chunk as the total material energy, the Mahatattva, one can understand that the chunk was agitated by the glance of the Lord. Thus the Lord's glance is the original cause of material creation. There's a difference between the devotees and the non-devotees. However exalted they may be in the material world, the non-devotees are working with the material energy, which is nothing but a combination of five gross and three subtle energies. And ultimately, as we learn in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that the reality is that everyone is depending on Krishna for whatever they have. As it says, yayatamam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham mamavart manuvartante manushaparta sarvashaha. Everyone is surrendering to Krishna and therefore getting rewarded accordingly. We ourselves are only a tiny soul, 1/10,000th of a sip of hair in size. And the only thing we're really doing is desiring in this body in terms of actually doing something. Now we're conscious through these five senses. We're conscious of what we see, what we hear, but we're conscious through these material senses. And of course we can move with these active organs, the legs, the arms, etc. But we ourselves are simply observers. But because we experience the material world through our senses, therefore we have a tendency to want to make arrangements in the material world so that we have a better experience in the material world. In other words, everyone simply wants the best possible experience we can get in the material world. And according to their understanding what the best possible experience, that's what they're desiring under the circumstance. Now, as I said before, if we get the body of an animal, then there's not much more input we can put into the equation. There's not much more input will be put into the equation so that we'll have very many alternatives to desire. Strotras, chakshu, sparshanam cha, rasanam granam evacha, adishana manakchanya up vishaya upasevate. When the soul enters into a body, then he gets a particular set of senses, namely a sense of shrotram, means hearing, chakshu, eyes, seeing. We get a particular set of ears and nose and eyes, and we through these senses we have an experience in the mind. Now for the animals, there's no question of their doubting or thinking about that they're different from their body. And therefore they never think themselves other than the doer. But for human being, he may be caught up in the material concept of life. I'm the doer, I'm doing so many different things. I'm gaining, I'm losing. But this is called illusion. Because actually we're simply, as it says, anadidvam nirgunadvat paramatmayam avyam sharira stopikantiya nakaroti nanalipyate. That those who could actually see, we're not talking about just looking through these eyes, seeing with the eyes of knowledge, with intelligence, can see that the soul is transcendental, eternal, and beyond the modes of nature, despite contact with the material body or Arjuna, one is neither entangled, one is neither doing anything nor one is entangled. So this is a big blow to our false ego, to start thinking that I'm not the doer, I'm not entangled. It's just disappointing for the conditioned soul. I've worked so hard since time immemorial to get this wonderful body I'm in now. It has so much potential. So it's so, my mind, it's so great, so wonderful. And you're telling me I'm not this body? I can't take even credit for my activities? That I'm transcendental? You mean nothing is really happening to me? This is very disappointing. Now, I don't want anything bad to happen to me, but when I take pleasure when I hear about bad things happening to other people I don't like. So I'd really like to think that something's happening to them. Bad, of course. And of course, good things, I take credit for. I think I deserve it. There should be more good things. Let the good things flow. Let the good times flow. Because I deserve so much more. But anyhow, what to do? So to actually become convinced, not just convinced theoretically, but to actually realize that we're eternal souls beyond this material nature, and that there's nothing to gain in the material world, nor is there anything to lose, because we have nothing to do with the material world. Therefore, there's no question of being envious of anyone, or even thinking that someone is better than someone else in the material world. Of course, things are judged according to how much one is Krishna conscious, how much is actually one is taking shelter of Krishna. Otherwise, it's called Shravana Evihi Kevalam. But in that sense, if everyone is a spirit soul eternally, as it says that Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhu Kavanoi Shravanadi Shuddha Chitte Koreya Udoy, that Nitya Siddha, everyone is a Nitya Siddha. So if someone asks you who you are, you can say, I'm a Nitya Siddha. Really? You don't appear to be very much of a Siddha. Well, Nitya Krishna Prema, because dormant in my heart is Krishna Prema. The potential is there. Just like potential in a seed is a big tree, but you have to water it, and then the tree comes out. So everyone has the equal opportunity to water the tree of devotional service and manifest pure love for Krishna, which is our only real activity. If we don't love Krishna, if we don't love Krishna's devotees, if we don't see things properly, if we are covered by we accept the most material nature. We say accept because we think, well, I'm in this body, I'm a victim, I'm identifying with this body. What can I do? Well, we don't have to accept the body as ourselves. We don't have to accept what the mind dictates to us. We can find out what Krishna wants us to do and then do that, desire to do that, and then Krishna will make the arrangements through his superior energy that our activities will be manifested by the spiritual energy rather than the material energy. That's our only choice. At every moment, we can decide, let my activities be manifested through the spiritual energy, or forget about the spiritual energy. I got so many things to do in this material world for my progress and happiness. So that at every moment we have that choice, and we take the right choice. Then eventually we'll realize, actually, I'm not the doer. As our activities become more and more wonderful because of the spiritual energy, maybe not externally, but internally, we can see how wonderful it is to be under the internal energy. But then we realize I'm not the doer. I'm simply desiring. And simply I'm desiring because I have good association. The acharyas in disciple succession and those who are following the acharyas in disciple succession, because they're giving me association and example and instructions. Therefore, I know what to desire to please Krishna. And therefore, because of that, I'm being put under the spiritual energy. Now we think, well, actually it's just the acharyas, it's just they're the ones who are saving me, everyone else is more or less useless, they're a decoration in my life. But actually the acharyas teach us how to serve all the other devotees too and appreciate them. And without seeing, appreciating and serving the other devotees, then we're not really taking shelter of the acharyas, because that's why they're acharyas. Because they know perfectly how to appreciate and serve all the other devotees, plus all the other living entities. How to desire the welfare of all living entities. How to desire to somehow or another act in such a way as to help everyone become conscious of Krishna. That's the life, not only here in the material world, but also in the spiritual world. That's all people are doing. That's all the souls are doing, is acting in such a way is to help everyone else develop more and more love for Krishna. So that's our choice, whether we want to act as a devotee or we want to act as a non-devotee. So here we find out, it doesn't matter how high you get, Prabhupada gives the example that the vultures, they fly very high in the air, but their business is looking on the ground and seeing if they can find a dead body to eat. So they have very good vision, but it's not transcendental. They have very big power to go very high in the air, but their only business is to come down to the lowest position and eat a dead body on the ground. So you can go. We can rise up to a very exalted position by following Krishna's instructions, following the Vedas, learning how to desire properly, taking shelter of the right people, the right instructions. We can become as powerful as the Rasa Muni, but if our objective is enviousness against the Vaishnavas, then we'll fall down to the lowest position. Then the Sudarshan Chakra will also come for us, but not to save us. So one has to understand things properly, and the only proper way of understanding is by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Otherwise, previously, one could study the Vedas and rise up to exalted positions, but without understanding the position of the Vaishnavas, without understanding the service to the Vaishnavas and Krishna, one will eventually fall down to the lowest position. It is said that one time, each one of us were either a Brahma or exalted demigod. And now, where are we? We're in a better position than the exalted demigods and Lord Brahma, but we have to be careful if we don't understand what position we're trying to obtain and how to obtain it. Because we're very tiny. All we have is the capacity to desire, and we've had so much bad association in the material world, the tendency to desire in so many weird ways. And therefore, we're like a ping pong ball. Sometimes in the association of devotees, we're like saints, and then we, somehow or another, we walk out of the room after the class, and as I always said, suddenly two little horns pop up. We try to hide our tail. How is this possible? Because we just have to glance in the wrong place, we just have to smell the wrong thing, and immediately our mind gets attracted to so many memories and how nice it was, and maybe I should do it again, and it was so nice, and it's so austere here. So one has to hear properly, and then try to understand properly, and pray to Krishna to understand things properly, because it's only with that proper understanding can we control our mind and senses, and not accept whatever impulse the senses drive us towards, or whatever thing that comes into my mind. Yeah, of course, that's so nice. I feel it with my heart. I got to do it. I'll never be happy unless I do. So that's all we can do. Tani sarvani samyamya yukta sitamatra vishehi yasyandriyani tasya pragya pradishita. One who restrains his senses and fixes his consciousness upon me is known as a man of steady intelligence. So that's all we can really do, is not accept the urges of the senses or the urges of the mind, try to conquer them with transcendental knowledge. That no, I don't have to do it. I don't want to do it. Krishna, give me the strength so I can just ignore these senses, the urges of the senses and my desires. And I want to serve you. Please put me under the spiritual energy so that instead of being overwhelmed by the material energy, I'll be overwhelmed by the spiritual energy. So we can't stop desiring. We have to simply add Krishna to our desire, and the desire to serve him appropriately. And only with Krishna's mercy can we conquer over this illusory energy. So here's the example of Amrish, a humble devotee, simply taking shelter of Krishna, And Krishna's arranging the whole material universe, so he arranged it, Durvasa Muni, because of his desire, because he couldn't control his senses and mind, although he was a great yogi, in the presence of a humble devotee, he couldn't control his mind and senses. He was too envious. And therefore he got himself into a lot of difficulty, becoming overwhelmed by the material energy. But he was fortunate because he was a great soul also, partial incarnation of Lord Shiva, and therefore he had the fortune, he could actually go and meet Lord Vishnu and ask him to help and finally get the last instruction, take shelter of the devotees. And he definitely had a good reason to take shelter of devotees at that particular moment, which he did. And he got the result. And I doubt whether Durvasa Muni ever again offended any Vaishnava. He didn't have fond memories of going all over the universe being burnt by the Sudarsan chakra for a year. But we ourselves, we're not as fortunate as Durvasa Muni because we're being burnt eternally by the Sudarsan chakra. And we think it's a lot of fun. So that's the difference between, we may criticize Durvasa Muni, oh what a rascal, he offended Ambarish Maharaj. But what about us? Sudarsan chakra is chasing us up and down the universe since time immemorial. And we're trying to have a good time while he's burning us. Prabhupada gives the example like the lazy people. The king wanted to find out who's... He offered free room and board, which means free food and a free room to any lazy people in his kingdom. So of course, if you get an opportunity... You get a free room, and you get fed all, you know, three times a day. Of course, you'll take it if it's for free. So he advertised, and they had a big building. The whole building got filled up with people. Very expensive feeding so many lazy people. So the minister came to the king and said, so many lazy people have entered into the building, it's filled up, we can't even afford to feed for free so many lazy people. So the king said, well, just light the building on fire and we'll see who's actually lazy. So as soon as the building was lit on fire, everyone fled the building, except for two people. One of them said, oh, I think the front of your body's on fire. He said, well, look at your back, it's on fire too. So the king was told there's two people on fire in the building, but they won't leave. He said, they're actually lazy, feed them. So simply, we've been here in the material world since time immemorial, being burnt by the Sudarsan chakra, but we're too lazy to go back to Godhead. All we want is free food and we're all right. Place to sleep and some nice prasadam, and my life is perfect. Don't bother me with anything else. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you for inspiring lecture. I would just like to ask, when you mentioned that only with Krishna's grace, we need Krishna's grace, so I would like to ask what are some of the most effective ways to receive Krishna's grace?
One of them is chant the holy name. Second one is worship, hear Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. Third one is worship the deities. Fourth is to serve the devotees. And fifth is to live in a holy place like a temple or Mathura or Mayapur. So it's all here. It's called the morning program. And for those who come, it's also the evening program. Anything else? Yes.
So on the subject of offending Vaishnavas, we see that some people, they are not even afraid of offending Vaishnavas. They just go on offending Vaishnavas. And they don't seem to care that they're offending Vaishnavas. While the ones who are getting offended, they're so afraid to say anything, saying, oh, we don't want to make offense to this person. So this is something very curious for me. Could you tell us something about how to handle such situations?
how to handle the situation. Who should handle it?
Well, persons in authority who have to deal with such situations.
Where someone's repeatedly offending the devotees?
Mm-hmm.
Well, according to the Nectar of Devotion, there's three ways of dealing with offender. The one that was maybe sometimes practiced in previous ages, but not in this age. Well, the first thing is you try to defeat them by argument. And if you can't do that, then you cut out their tongue. And then you take your own life, unless you're a Brahmin. But that's a little extreme. And the third is you go away.
Mm.
But if you're an authority, then you tell the person, you know, you can't allow offenses to go on. Mm. If you're the authority, you can do something about it. So you have to choose what to do. As far as others go, you know, generally speaking, if you also have to decide what to do. But sometimes it takes usually two to tangle. One devotee is offending the other, and the other devotee is offending the other devotee, apparently. And sometimes it's not a wise thing to interfere with them. Because what they may do is they may agree to offend you. That's the way you'll get some agreement. They have some rasa going on with each other. They may enjoy it. Like Prabhupada used to point out that there was two leaders in our society in the 60s, late 60s, and they were brothers. They used to fight with each other all the time in the same temple. So the devotees used to go and complain. And Prabhupada said they're just like two pups in the same litter fighting with each other. Prabhupada didn't take it seriously. So there's varieties of ways of dealing with it.
Thank you.
Anything else?
So Avaduta Raya Prabhu has a question. One who lacks full conviction on the glories of the Lord's holy names does not achieve the desired results and instead suffers from offenses. Such people abandon their faith and consider the glories of the holy name to be exaggerations. They do not achieve any results but fall down to hell and suffer. Question. If somebody uttered the holy name, why he would go to hell? Earth planet is better for making advancement.
Well, first of all, we have to utter the holy name. The holy name is not just some letters of the alphabet. It's actually Krishna. So we actually act. The only way Krishna appears in anything is when we do it with devotion. So we chant snick snick ram ram day 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 hey kitty kitty hey kitty. It's not exactly chanting the holy name. So according to the quality, then Krishna reciprocates. But if one doesn't chant the holy name, one simply doesn't even bother moving one's lips and tongue, as Prabhupada said, then one will not get a taste for chanting. One may nama parad. One may chant offenselessly like the Mayavadis, thinking themselves to be Krishna. And the result is that they're not actually becoming purified. They're becoming more and more contaminated. So such a person's... When they still go to hell, I mean, when Prabhupada was asked, when he was in England, he said, what do you think of hell? We heard that you believe in hell. What is hell like? So Prabhupada said, England is hell. So there's different varieties of hell. Take birth in certain countries in this world nowadays during wars, it's good as being in hell. But the whole idea of the material world is suffering is to inspire us. Next time around, I'm going to chant my rounds better. Okay. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.